Do you have any movies from our childhood you'd like to discuss?
Are we starting right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, so we were talking before about how I had this, now sorry for just getting right into this, but we were talking earlier about when you grow up with stuff, you know, like a favorite movie or something, and you kind of miss that boat of like knowing that something's going to be important to you. And so you kind of miss that whole like, embracing it,
like not realizing it at the time.
Yes, yes.
That this movie is going to be so impactful, or
and who you are in a sense.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, like for me, you know, there's a handful of things I don't remember the first time of, you know, that are part of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, like I don't remember the first time I met my parents. I don't remember the first time I met my older sister. You know, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, these are things that you are too young to.
Right.
I don't remember the first time I tasted pizza. And I never, and like in one movie is Night of the Living Dead. I don't remember the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just always been there. And so it's kind of weird to think like, I've seen this movie. I remember the first time introducing it to another human being. I was 6 years old. I was in first grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I introduced it to, you know, my best friend from back in Jersey, this little tomboy, Jennifer Zayre was her name. And I remember just like putting this movie in and we're just watching it. And I'm just kind of like, you know, bopping around watching this movie, oh, there's a good part, and I just remember like just seeing this girl's reaction to, like, you know, back in like falling back into the couch, eyes wide open, just traumatized look on her face, like, what the fuck are we watching, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just to go on this, to set up the point I'm talking about is like, however, you and I share a very mutual love for a movie that I actually got to and remember embracing it and watching it for the first time twice in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's The Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
And so the first time I watched this movie was a recorded tape that my parents left me. And it is and it was recorded off of TV. So it was obviously heavily edited for television. But there is some kind of a charm to that in the sense that watching this movie, you could tell it was my dad, because my dad just let it record straight through the commercials, you know, where my mom would try to stop and, like, you know, cut out as much of the commercial time as possible. But one thing I was thinking about this is that those commercials.
I remember that. Like, I remember recording movies that were on basic cable and stuff.
Yeah.
And you'd stop it. So that when you would rewatch those movies,
you didn't have to,
sit through the commercials. Yeah.
Yeah. But my dad, he was so fucking lazy, he just probably hit record and just made sure that he turned it off when the movie
was over. My dad would do the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad wasn't going to get up and do that.
Yeah.
I think about it, it's weird.
But what I think about that is it was late night television. So the only two commercials that kept repeating were an infomercial for the classic first three seasons of Saturday Night Live that they're re-releasing. And you can only get it through this special order, this offer on this one network at this time. You know, you call it and it's like $19.99 to get the first three seasons. They're showing, you know, Candy Graham and all that crap, you know.
Seems like a lot for the first three seasons back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and the other shit was the you remember the late night like call now the sex hotline?
Fuck
phone
yeah, number? I remember those. You ever called them?
No,
never.
My mom would have got so mad.
I did, and she did.
Hello.
Yeah,
but you needed a credit card to call, didn't you?
Yeah.
Stolen
one.
I didn't know anyone. My parents didn't have credit cards in the 90s.
Oh man.
Yeah, so like
you missed out on your first sexual experience with the phone sex operator too.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember trying to call them on the payphone at work, you know. Or not at work, at school.
School.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to do that all the time.
Just yeah. call it punch.
Yeah.
1-900
Wet bunghole.
Yeah.
And like when anything. And invariably with fat lady. I remember that 1-800 fat lady.
Say like I'm chunky.
Yeah. 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 If you could come up with any bizarre combination, yeah. there was a phone line for it.
1-800 big tits. No, that was one of them. And
yeah, isn't that bizarre? Like, to like randomly push in these numbers on the phone with the corresponding letters just to hear like that introduction, welcome to 1-800 fat lady, mm-hmm. right? That sexy, sultry, husky voice.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, just putting that into a web browser, right? And then getting as much fat lady action as you're, yeah. as you can handle.
It's definitely, we've come a long way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fuck yeah. Like, fast. Because mm-hmm. we were part of that, we were still, like, still in that age range when you could do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, not everybody had internet access in their house, but we were of that age when you could do that, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I remember, I was, like, 16, and it was when I moved to Massachusetts, and we had a... I was the only one in the house who had a computer. You know, Sean hooked me up with one before. And we had the Roadrunner, you know, where it came through your cable instead of your phone line.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was, like, kind of a new thing. It was much faster. And I remember just, like, you know, I'd be – and I had it in my bedroom, and I'd always, like, you know, just use it for writing and, you know, looking at, like, zombie stuff, you know. Romero had his own little webpage and shit. I was always following.
Tom Savini one.
Yep.
I remember that. You showed that to me.
Yeah, so, like, I'd do shit like that, you know, just totally innocent, you know. Nothing. And I'd go and just, like, you know, watch TV, fall asleep, and I'd wake up to my dad in my room on the fucking computer looking up porn. I was like, what are you doing? And, I mean, he had his pants on. He wasn't touching himself or anything, but it's just...
It's still really weird. It's like, that's weird. The first thing that he does.
He's going through my fucking computer playing on, like, just looking at porn shit, and he's just sitting there giggling like a fucking 13-year-old kid, and I'm like, what? This is so weird, Dad.
That is really
Get
weird.
Get out of my room.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sleeping.
I don't know, man. Like, When was the first time do you remember the first time you saw a porno mag?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The first time, remember the first time?
Yeah, I was extremely young.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in my dad's sock drawer.
Mm-hmm.
Just going through there because my dad always had cool, like, knives and shit in there.
Mm-hmm.
Weird stuff. I remember pulling out a dirty magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of looking through it. And it was just, like, I was not aroused. Mm-hmm. I was really young, you know?
Yeah.
So I wasn't, like, looking at it. I was just like, oh, am I supposed to?
But it piqued your curiosity.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking at these ladies with their clothes off. But you got to understand, too. It's like, you know, I'm coming from, that's not new to me. You know, the era of movies we grew up watching, none of the ladies had clothes on, you know? So it's not like the first time I saw boobs or was in this magazine. Mm-hmm. It was on a Friday the 13th, probably.
Did your parents try to keep you from that stuff?
Not at all.
No, not at all?
Not at all.
They never said that. No.
Maybe he shouldn't
Don't
watch
let
this.
Him see this. Rick, close your eyes. Blah, blah, blah.
No. No one ever told me no.
Wow.
When I had that, like, yeah, I guess, like, thinking back on it, it's kind of weird, huh?
It
like,
is, but then again, at the same time, I think it's probably served you better because I was told no, 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 no. And I don't think my relationship with that material has been all that great over the years. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean... Yeah, I mean, half the time, though, I didn't watch these movies with my parents. You know, my dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like I'd go and rent these, like, straight-to-video B-rated horror films where, you know, based on the cover of the chick in the skimpy bikini with the fucking monster chasing her, you know, my mom wasn't going to watch that, but my dad and I watched it, you know. And this, you know, like I was saying with Night of the Living Dead, you know, I started watching horror films at an extremely young age. And so it was like... And I remember the first time seeing a movie that terrified the shit out of me was The Unnamable.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just,
I dated her.
Yeah. Yes, you did. But Melanie? Is that her name? Okay. See, we can name it.
Yeah.
We can name named it.
The Unnamable's been named.
But
first name only, though.
Yes. So it was one of those movies, it just scared the fuck out of me. And I don't know why, because I remember the cover had the fucking monster right on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right front center on the cover of the box. But the whole movie, they built up as a mystery. And you only see, like, the fucking creature at the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh, well, it's on the box.
Yeah.
Whatever. But it still scared the shit out of me. Okay. I remember being in my room just terrified that she was going to climb through my fucking window and, like, rip my head off or something. And I ran to my fucking parents' room and, you know, just stood there in the doorway. And, of course, they sensed something. They're like, what do you want? I was like, I'm scared. Fine. Crawl in bed with me. And my mom's yelling at my dad. Say, I told you not to let her watch those damn movies. And my dad's like, shut the fuck up. And so, like, once I get comfortable, you know, he waits. You know, I get in the middle of them. I'm like, yes, finally. And get snuggled up. And my dad's like, you know, you can't watch scary movies no more, though. I crawl out of bed and go back to my room and suck it up.
Yeah.
You know, just sat there waiting for her to come through my window. But it was all worth it because I was going to watch these movies.
Why do you think those movies meant so much to you?
I don't know.
Do you think because you saw them so young, before you saw other things, do you think it's something about them specifically that appealed to you?
I thought about this a lot. And I think, honestly, it has to be with the fact that that's the only thing I'm not afraid of. Everything else in the world scares the shit out of me. You know?
Yeah.
I'm terrified of being in a situation in a public room, you know, with a lot of people, you know? Even sitting here talking in front of a microphone is kind of, you know, makes me nervous.
It's jarring.
It's a bit jarring. You know, I'm not comfortable with, like, the way I talk and how I talk. You know, I feel very self-conscious about the way I say things.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, just speaking in front of people in general just... it traumatizes me.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships scare the fuck out of me because I fuck them up.
It's weird, yeah, but you don't avoid them.
No, I like it. It's, yeah. You know.
You avoid a lot of other things that are scary, but you don't avoid those.
Yeah.
I avoid them.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, talking about terror, it's weird.
It is.
Yeah, it is. It's weird how we handle it. Like, I like what Wes Craven said about that, right? When he said that when you're making a horror movie, make sure it's something different because the audience is already scared.
Right.
I think that's brilliant. Just such brilliant advice for an aspiring horror filmmaker, right? I mean, he's acknowledging that, like, people who go to horror movies, we're all terrified, all of us, right? So what we want is we want something different. You know, we all know what fear is. We know what terror is. But we need something different, something that we're not used to, we're not accustomed to, right? To really shake us out of ourselves. And horror movies can very powerfully do that. And another great thing I remember reading once, I can't remember who said it, maybe Stan Winston said that horror and comedy are two sides of the same coin.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that, too.
Absolutely. You know? I agree.
Because I think there are things that get reactions that you can't control, right? Like, if it's funny, you're going to laugh. Like, there's no way to suppress it. And if you're scared, you're scared, right? Like, if it gets to you, it gets to you. You can't really rationalize it or use logic. Like, if it works, it works. And there's a pretty sure way of telling if it works. Are you laughing? Are you scared? Then it's working, you know?
Yes. And I guess that's a good way to just get back into the topic is what makes Return of the Living Dead such a great film.
Because
it does both, you know? I didn't recognize
it. It didn't ever terrify you. Was there any scene that really scared you?
I think what scares me is I was used to the Romero zombie films at this time, you know? When I first was introduced to The Return of the Living Dead, actually, you know, I have more memories of the sequel than I do with the original. You know, I saw the sequel way before. So the two zombie movies that always stuck with me was Night of the Living Dead and The Return of the Living Dead Part 2. But, like, at a young age, anything that had a zombie on the cover, I'd rent it. You know, I don't know if you remember, there's like an Italian franchise, the Tombs of the Blind Dead.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So, you know, anything Italian and zombies, it's because they're everywhere. You know, they're a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
And so, like, I watched a lot of that, and they all stuck with the Romero formula. You know, slow, you can kill them by shooting them in the head or taking off the head, you know, stuff like that. So I think with Return of the Living Dead, what made it kind of terrifying was it took you out of that safety zone. You know, these things, they're fast. You know, they can run just as fast as us. They're not the sprinting zombies, but they stumble pretty quickly towards you, you know. They can think. They can rationalize. They can plot, you know. All these things that, you know, Romero zombies couldn't do, these things were doing. You know, they had feelings too, you know. They were doing it for a reason, you know. And so I think that's what was kind of like, there's something very bizarre about that, you know, and what made Night of the Living Dead scary was the fact that this is something different at that time. And I think what made Return of the Living Dead was it was different from that, you know.
So but why do you think it was important, you know, in any big scheme?
well, personally important. I guess like for me, it just has a special place in my heart. Mm-hmm. But for the genre, it is what I just said. It's different, yeah. You know. Yeah. And I think what makes it important is it's very artistic in how it does it. Mm-hmm. You know, these characters, every character, if you hate them or not, you have feelings for these characters. I don't think there was one character in that movie I wanted to see really die, you know? Even the asshole punks, you know, someone was like, ah, damn it, they got that one, you know?
I mean, that's a good point. There was no real villain in the movie except for the U.S. military.
Exactly.
Yeah. Actually, that guy, he could have died. Yes. I'd been fine with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
The military fucked up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, there's something about it.
One villain, they pretty much give him 30 seconds in the film.
Right.
And then enough to make you hate him.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, every character in that movie, you wanted to see survive.
Yeah, you're rooting for him, even the zombies to some extent.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I didn't want to see Tarman get his head knocked off, but it was cool.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, because he didn't die, right? There's no major consequences. They keep coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, maybe that's something really appealing about the whole zombie genre, right? It gives hope that there's life after, right? And a very physical life, even if it's an ugly one.
Yeah, I would say that's part of it. Mm-hmm. I'd say another part is just like a survivalist instinct in everyone to survive, I guess. I think that's something like watching a zombie film. You can't help but imagine what would you do in that situation, you know? It's like watching Bear Grylls or something, you know, watching him. Like, how would I survive? Can I do this shit? You know, even though sometimes those shows are bullshit and they're annoying to watch, but you still do it. Just like, you never know when your plane might crash in the middle of the Alps, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe this is good knowledge to have. Mm-hmm. And
Avoid planes and the Alps. I guess. Just two things that would, you know.
But you never know. You never know. But you know what I mean? It's survivalist, you know, that every human
we definitely want to survive, and then there's an interest in us, I suppose, to do that under any circumstance,
right? And I think like
preparedness,
and I feel like The Walking Dead really brought in kind of this, like, because it made it a household name, it made zombies popular to 3-year-olds, you know, and so when you I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, you know, like, I plotted, like, you know, if this happens, how would I get out of my apartment? What would I do? What windows would I board up? You know, how would I get wood, you know, to board them up? Shit like that, you know? What would I do, like, as a fucking teenager, I was making these plans for when the dead, you know, started to come to life. It's
productive.
But, and I think that's what makes it so, because, I mean, like, vampires, you know, werewolves, Jason, you know, these things. I mean, like, you don't really, you know, it's fake, you know, it's fantasy, but I don't know why you can't separate that from something like zombies, you know? I mean, because is it something that, like, even if you're a religious person, it talks about that in the Bible, does it not? I mean, about the resurrection, right?
Resurrection, sure.
And I think people just associate that with, in that kind of a sense too. Or, you know, like a punishment, like from above, you know, a higher power, or something very mundane as a fucking virus, you know, we're always coming up with seeing these new plagues or viruses coming out, you know, these new sicknesses. And, you know, I think it's just anything to that degree, just like people like, I can see zombies more than I can see Freddy Krueger, you know,
because I think we see ourselves in it, like Absolutely. We instantly see ourselves. You know, and that's always the scariest thing, I think, you know.
We humans, can be the monsters.
Humans are the scariest things in the world, really.
Absolutely.
And zombies are very, very clearly human. And also, like, but what Romero did, it seems like a lot of his films, especially those early ones, you know, zombies really represented something more, right, than just horror or more than just reanimated corpses. Like, there's a lot of social commentary in those movies.
Absolutely. You know, I think Night of the Living Dead, it was very civil rights, very anti-war in Vietnam, you know? I mean, because, I was not born in this.
Was that deliberate for him, or was that something?
I think it was a happy accident, to be honest.
I kind of think so. I think it's one of those things where, like, because it's in the culture and it's so heavy in the culture, you can't avoid it.
Exactly.
You can't avoid
talking Easy about Rider and Nile and Dead, I think, are this have very similar tones.
Yeah, kind of like whatever you do now, you know, Trump and Trumpism and the milieu and the culture, it's going to come out in whatever it is you do.
Yes.
You know.
And I think what also reflects heavily through that movie with this is just that documentary style filmmaking that a lot of these guys had to utilize, you know, the run and gun, you know, just point, shoot, that's what we're getting.
Yeah.
And so you felt like, you know, like whatever I think they were seeing on the television screen in the late 60s that was representing, you know, like the march, you know, was it
Selma.
Yeah. You know, that march or, you know, the soldiers or, you know, Kennedy's assassination, whatever was going on the television throughout the 60s, you're seeing that. And I can't help but think that, like, maybe that's exactly kind of how they're seen on the television screen in Night of the Living Dead when they're watching things. I mean, you're getting all your information the same time these characters were because you're learning it as they're learning it through this news broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a lot of that, like, you know, people just associated, like, oh, man, it's just, like, watching this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, like, the whole civil rights thing, you know, like, the black lead, all that shit was just accidental.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Because they wrote it for a white guy, a friend of theirs.
Yeah.
The black dude just happened to be the better actor.
Yeah.
And they did not change the line.
Yeah.
And made the movie a better movie.
It did,
which, I mean, like, if you would think if they would have kept it with the same actor, would have been such an important film.
Good question. I think it still would have been very influential, but it may not have. We might not be having political discussions about Night of the Living Dead. It would be confined to mere entertainment, probably.
But then that makes you go 10 years in the future to Dawn of the Dead. Would he still have that same, like, all right, it worked this way, having this social commentary in the first film. Now when we do this one, all these shopping centers.
Yeah, that one seemed much more deliberate.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Consumerism.
Yeah, right. And fear of crowds. You know what I mean? I think that's also one of those things that people are genuinely terrified of is the hordes, right? You're afraid of large masses of people coming at you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Whether they're armies, whether they're protesters, whether it's zombies, like that gets at a really like innate fear of the large mob.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one of the reasons why those movies really resonate with people. Because again, we see ourselves in that. We sometimes are part of the mob and sometimes we're outside of it.
Yes.
You know?
So then let me ask you this. We can see what Romero's films, why they're so important, why they stand the test of time, and why they inspire such a huge genre, you know? I mean, he created this subgenre, you know? So why is the Return of the Living Dead so important to you then?
I think it's lost its importance a little bit to me over the years. I don't know that I place as much value on it as I once did. I love the movie and I can watch it and rewatch it to a degree, but I don't think that I have a nostalgic feeling and an attachment to it for sure. But I don't know that I appreciate it on as grand of a level as I used to. And again, that's one of those things that, you know, causes me some distress sometimes. So, like, I don't have a lot of my childhood love of things. So I'm turning into a curmudgeon in so many ways and being very dismissive about things that I wish I had more of a childlike glee for.
Mm-hmm.
I think the movie works in so many ways as a piece of art, as you said, because it beautifully blends comedy and horror. I the horror element never really, because maybe I just saw it when I was older, and it never scared me on any level. It just was always more comedy, more of a spoof, you know.
Right.
The perfect soundtrack, you know.
Right.
Great casting, just characters that you fall in love with. I mean, you said it all. Like, it's just got one of those movies. It's funny. I mean, in a very slick and cool way.
Yes, it's very fast-paced. You don't lose a beat.
Right.
No.
And it just stands up. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a movie that you and I, and I mentioned that, you know, I rediscovered this movie twice. It's because I got to watch it for the first time the way it was supposed to be viewed, like, unedited.
Yeah.
You know.
On HBO?
No, with you. You and I
know, but wasn't it supposed to be viewed on television? Wasn't that one of the controversies about it?
I don't think so.
I think it was. Like, that's the way it was shot. Like, I think if I remember correctly, reading something about how it was shot, I think, to be viewed on, like, HBO television.
Really?
Yeah. And seeing it in the theater, it's more distorted because it was never shot. It was never really meant to be shot that way. It was always, like, had they had it in mind for it to just be to on go, television.
That's interesting. Yeah. I never knew that.
Yeah. I remember reading that, like, a long time ago. Like, remember, because I stole us copies of it, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. And I remember the imprint on the box was something like...
Yeah, it said HBO.
HBO, yeah. 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 And I remember back when we were really, like, hungry to find the actual version of it untampered and doing some research on it. And that's when I discovered that. It's a bit strange.
Very strange.
Yeah. It's just trivia. But, like, I don't, you know, when people ask me, you know, what was a movie that changed your life? Or, you know what I mean? That the movie doesn't come to mind as often. You know what I
really?
Mean? Yeah. No, I have to dig a little bit to think about it.
Like, I mean, I definitely know. I mean, that was not, you were not grown. You and I are very, I think that's why Return of the Dead, I think, is so important to the two of us, because it blends both of our genres. Mm-hmm. You are more of
that's
a,
true. Yeah.
You were more of a comedy guy. I'm more of a horror guy. Like, you grew up watching Mel Brooks movies, you know?
Yeah. Woody Allen.
Woody Allen.
David Shanley.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why we, and at that time, at the age, we're both discovering punk music. So it was like horror, yeah. comedy, punk, it, nudity,
that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
Split Dogs.
Yeah.
It was all there.
Yeah. It's one of the most meaningful movies to me because of you, because of our friendship.
Right.
The movie itself and how it's, you know, impacted my life is, I guess, more minimal, I think.
So what do you think is like, all right, so why I wanted to talk about this tonight was, I don't know if you saw the commercial for the new Ghostbusters film.
No.
But it's out there. And
my God.
It's the third Ghostbusters film. And we're talking about nostalgia. We're talking about how... how come it seems like, even though we could talk about these movies, and a lot of people of a younger generation who are still like our friends and closer our age don't have that, you know, connection to things from their past.
Mm-hmm.
But yet we're seeing things from our past resurface.
Mm-hmm.
Like this Ghostbusters 3 trailer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which, I don't know.
You think it looks good?
I do. I definitely appreciate what they're doing with it, you know, going to a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Not trying to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
But I read some, like, comments already about people just upset, like, you know, when is the Stranger Things, like, theme going to die, you know? And I think, like...
But it's not that, is it?
No, I mean, because you... How,
it's not that.
You look back. I mean, kids have always been, like, a center of...
Yeah,
I mean,
but also, like, look back at everything. Look, why is every television show about cops and lawyers and judges? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's
nurses,
been that way. Yeah,
doctors.
It's been that way since television was invented.
Right.
Like, all of your primary shows are about these things. Why? I mean, are those the only interesting jobs out there? No. But it's more that, like, I feel they're obviously they're professions that have a lot of drama associated with it. But it's also very comfortable. You know what I mean? Like, those shows my mom watched when she was a little girl. They're shows that she watches now. And there's something very powerful in comfort. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
You know? And that's, you know, these companies, these production companies, film, television, etc., they're very good at doing that, you know what I mean? They're very good at you know, imagining what a viewer wants when they're tired, when they come home from work, you know, what is it that they're really looking for in their lives? What is it that's going to fill that little empty hole in their lives? They want something familiar. They want something that they don't have to think about too much, you know? And I feel like that mentality drives a lot of these nostalgia films. It's not just Stranger Things. It's not just Ghostbusters. It's not just comic book culture, Big Bang Theory. People like what's comfortable, what just feels right to them. Mm-hmm. And you could trace it all back ad infinitum to ancient myths, right? We can trace all these tropes and these themes thousands of years and all come to the same conclusion. We're really comfortable with certain themes, with certain stories. And when we recognize, when we hear that music, you know, that Ghostbusters music, that Stranger Things theme, you know, it gets something. Is when we hear any song from the Return of the Living Dead soundtrack, it brings us back. Right? It's a time machine.
Absolutely.
So it's not so hard to imagine. And I don't even really, it doesn't make me angry. The lack of imagination disappoints me in general. Like, human beings' lack of imagination. I guess you can't expect everything to be so unique and inventive and wacky, because then we wouldn't know what unique and inventive and wacky is, right? You need like some boring shit out there to appreciate the really exciting and cool stuff.
Yeah.
But you do have to sometimes, you know, sigh a little bit when you're like, another sequel?
Well, no.
No? I mean, more optimistic than me.
Well, you know, sequels I grew up on. You know? I mean, how many Friday the 13th sequels came out in a 10-year span?
No, that's true, yeah. I didn't mind them when I was a kid.
Either. I didn't.
I loved them. I looked forward to them. And then Batman Forever came out. And yeah, I stopped loving sequels.
That did ruin it, didn't it? Man. That movie.
Because I think we always get to that. We do inevitably have to get to a point where we're just like, enough. I've had enough. Okay.
Well, we personally can have enough, but that doesn't mean
other people who... I don't begrudge them making them and people watching them.
I mean, because...
But just me personally, I have to cut it off at some point.
True. Yes. Yeah. I mean, but if it looks good, I'm going to check it out. Mm-hmm. You know, and if it's there, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't seek them.
Yeah.
No, but... I don't know. I think after the Paul Feig, you know, Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm.
Did you watch that one?
Unfortunately, I did.
Was it disappointing?
Very.
Was it disappointing because there were women?
No, it had nothing to do with the women. It just had to do with those women.
What if they were boys? What if it was the boy from Saturday Night Live? Keenan Raquel, I can't remember which. What if it was other boy from Saturday Night Live, young boy with lots of tattoos?
I don't.
What if it was?
No, it has nothing to do with the.
Okay.
It was.
What if it still sucked?
Yes.
I'm genuinely interested because I don't know.
It was not good, and I think.
It seemed lazy to me. It seemed like let's just reverse the genders.
That's exactly how it was. That's exactly how it was. Man.
Was it?
Yes.
And I felt bad for even thinking it without seeing it, but I'm glad to know I was not.
See, that's what this movie that's coming out, it's like, all right, so they're taking it different, you know? Mm-hmm. And I appreciate this direction they're going with it, because they're not trying to reinvent this, you know? So I kind of like where they're this direction, you know, after the podcast, we can throw on the trailer and, you know, or if you want to push pause, we can watch it and we can talk about it.
All right. Stay tuned. Kids. Yeah. It looks like.
Does it look better than the all female cast?
Yeah, but I don't know why. It doesn't look good. Like, it looks a little bit like, what was that one they did? Is it called Evolution or something? What was that one they did with David Duchovny?
Yes, Evolution.
Yeah, because that was Jason Reitman, wasn't it?
Was it?
Or Ivan Reitman?
Maybe.
Ivan Reitman. It was Ivan Reitman. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it had like a Ghostbusters-y kind of feel. And it wasn't a terrible movie, but it wasn't a particularly memorable movie.
Yeah, because I remember the movie coming out. I remember like the three-eyed smiley face as the logo, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Donkey Lips from Salute Your Shorts.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he had really good hair, I remember. Yeah. But it wasn't a... It reminds me of that. Like, it looks serviceable. Like, it would be cute. Like, if I were a kid, I think I would really like it. You know what I mean? And it looks almost like that's... Like, they're marketing it more for, like, younger kids, newer generation, and...
With the parents of the old generation.
Yeah, something that their parents would take them to. You could see this meeting happening, right? It's got something for everyone. You can imagine this meeting. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I like it. Green light.
You got the son of the man who made the original ones making this one for the kids.
You just hear the...
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for this stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought you... Because Ghostbusters, I think, a film, unlike Return of the Living Dead, I think might still have more of a sentimental feeling towards
it. It does. I love Ghostbusters. I do. And I still feel it. But I'm also cynical and jaded in that, you know... I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I don't want to go back. You know what I mean? I almost fight it.
Why do you think that is?
I don't like the past very much.
But you like those things in the past.
Yeah, I do.
I remember you
were... It's not like I have particularly traumatic memories, I also don't like to reminisce too much. Like, it brings me some kind of anxiety and pain, I think. Even if it wasn't a horrible childhood, which it most certainly was not... It sometimes just reminds me that, like, that it's all over and that, you know, death is what I look forward to. It does. It awakens certain feelings like that in me. I don't have kids, and I don't have a reason or a way to relive that stuff. You know what I mean? So when I do relive it now, it's always like as a 26-year-old and a 36-year-old and a 46-year-old or however many years I get on this planet. Mm-hmm. And it always comes, like, it awakens up different feelings in me every time, you know? And most of them are like, good feelings, but sometimes it's just bad. It reminds me that I'm going to die, and I don't like it.
No, I, yes, that is something that I'm very aware of, and I understand. And for example, I think we probably talked about this once before, but a few years ago, just going through Netflix, you know, trying to find something easy to watch before I go to bed, I stumbled across the original Land Before Time. I throw that on. It's like, man, I haven't seen this movie since I was a kid. And it's pretty fucking corny, and I'm embarrassed to talk about it on over a radio microphone. Yeah. No, the podcast microphone.
We haven't even released it.
I know. But, like, just talking about, you know, this, like, what you're just saying, you know, this, like, you know, oh, man, I'm closer to death, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Watching that movie, and, like, at the end, you know, the music was playing, and it has the song that was playing, and I just, like, burst out in tears, and I don't know why, and it's just like, wow, I haven't seen this fucking movie or heard this song or any of this shit since I was, like, a fucking little kid, you know? I can't mm-hmm. remember the last time I saw it, and, like, I'm just getting this wave of emotions, just, like, you know, loving this movie as a child,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, probably 20-something years have passed since I've seen it,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm watching it, and it's, like, I think the same thing, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I feel like, you know, I'm closer to my grave than being able to experience mm-hmm. this as a child. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. Closer to 50 than you are to 20, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, we're basically right there at 36 that it's like, ugh, you know what I mean? And that stuff, like, it definitely weighs on me. And so, like, I try not to think about it. Remember last time we were talking about that whole Stalin thing about how he tried to recreate his whole childhood, basically, or at least erase it.
Right.
You know, I think about that a lot, and it's not just, like, one of those cool Stalin trivia things I like to bring up. There's something about that, like, psychologically, I fixated on, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like this, you know, he had a lot of reasons to try to shape his life, right? But we all do, you know? And you kind of, like, you know, I think about why, you know what I mean? Again, like, my childhood wasn't particularly traumatic, but, like, why not... Why don't I want to remember it? You know what I mean? I really try sometimes to repress a lot of that stuff. Like, I'll lie awake at night and think about things, good things, but I'll also try to chase them out of my head just as quickly as they come in, you know? Because it's like, I don't want to remember. I don't want to deal with that. You know what I mean? Hmm. Maybe it's like fear of being emotional, you know? Like, I have a hard time with emotions. I have a hard time just showing them. I don't think I have a hard time feeling them. Because I certainly feel things, but I really, really have a hard time showing it. And so for me, it's more like I just don't want to deal with it. I don't want to have those conversations, even if it's just internal in my own head.
It's pretty fascinating. I'm going to ask a question, and I don't want to dive too much into it, just a mm-hmm. simple yes or no. You know. But because I want to talk, let me, yeah. this is something that we'll talk about next sure. time as... Do you find it easier to enjoy an album that you listen to when you're a teenager versus watching a movie?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. It depends. It depends on both.
Okay.
I'd say about equal because, like, both movies and music are very powerful. I'd say for most people, music seems to bring up those feelings, you know? Music has a way of doing it sometimes that movies don't. I don't know why that is. Maybe that deserves some thought, but... I think that it depends on what it is. You know what I mean? Both of them are great at transporting you back in time, transporting me back in time.
No, me too.
Yeah, both of them. And, you know, we'll talk about music next time and specific ones. But, like, I'm trying to even think about movies that I've recently saw that have really, like, transported me back in time. And it happens for sure sometimes.
So, I mean, like, you still... You know, we'll watch, like, a Woody Allen or a Mel Brooks movie, right?
Not in a while, man.
Yeah.
Like, no, I've kind of, like, no, you know? I'm because I'm also, maybe it's a curmudgeon-y stage where I'm just like, I've seen it, I've done it, I've had enough, finally. You know what I mean?
So you don't like rewatching films?
Huh? I do. It depends. I think, honestly, a lot of it is, like, what you were saying, I like to watch people's reactions. I like to watch it with people who've never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
And I really get a kick out of that more than I like to necessarily rewatch the movies myself.
Right.
Because at some point, I feel like I've gotten mostly everything I can out of that movie. Unless I'm watching it with someone who's never seen it.
That's weird. Because, like,
you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely movies where it's like, I'm just going to, you know, I just want to watch this. And I'll put it in. I'll watch it. And, like, and I find myself, like, you know, reading my email says it's on, right. You know, or something. And
it becomes background.
It becomes background, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. It's like there's, like, certain moments where it's like I want to watch it for these moments, you know. Or it's just been a while since I've had this on, and it's like, you know, I know the story, but, like, there's stuff that, like, I kind of forget, you know?
Yeah, and I used to definitely voraciously watch and watch and watch without any thought. When I was alone, when I was with people, didn't matter. And I think when I was really aspiring to make movies, I would kind of fool myself into thinking it was research of some sort. And I guess in a way it was, but I don't know to what end, you know what I mean? I don't know what I really got out of it. And I think a lot about how, you know, a lot of values that I have, you know, some of them were definitely instilled in me by my parents, some of the most basic ones, but so many others came from nothing but films, you mm-hmm. know. Like, I didn't have, like, my parents are real prude kind of people in general, you know, and so they don't really talk about a lot of things like sex or drugs or any of that stuff. All of that stuff, all my perceptions of that stuff came from movies, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're not alone. I'm sure that's a lot of our generation. And I don't know, like, what that's done, you know what I mean? I think maybe I'm at a reflective point in my life. I'm starting to, like, examine this. Like, hold up a second. What have those movies done for me? What have they done to me? You know what I mean? What can I extract from them that is useful? And what should I maybe just kind of get rid of? You know what I mean? And one of the things I think I need to get rid of is the voracious watching and watching and watching, because I feel like it's doing nothing. You know what I mean? It's passive. I'm passively watching this thing. You know, I'd rather read. And so I try to spend more time reading. If I watch stuff now, I tend to watch a lot of sports because I don't know the outcome. You know what I mean? And it's more exciting for me. You know, I get that feeling once in a while. And I told you this too. I get so overwhelmed by the choices. It actually causes me panic. Like, I can't do it. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to see what's on Netflix. And I freak out. I break out into a cold sweat. I'm not even playing.
You start with
it. I kind of do, because I just get, like, choked by choice. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck. I don't know. I don't know where to begin. That could be really great.
Yeah.
That's about something I'm interested in. And then I realize it's like everything is at my fingertips, and all of a sudden, and I have a lot of interest, but all of a sudden when it's in front of me, I'm interested in nothing. And I realize, like, no, I don't care about fucking Stalin anymore. I don't want to watch anything on fucking video games from the 1980s. I don't want to watch anything. You know? Done.
Storm off.
Yeah. This happens, like, more than once a week.
Wow. I mean, I kind of set up a weekly kind of, like, agenda, what I'm going to try to hit.
I'd have to have an agenda. I have to have something I have to watch in that moment.
Well, I'm taking my nephew to see the new Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
When that comes out. So, and it's kind of made me, like, man, it's been a while since I've watched the Star Wars.
Yeah.
Movies. So, you know, I rewatched all those, you know, mm-hmm. I'm just now making it to, like, the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And I have the original theatrical version, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I just had to get through all that garbage just to get there.
It's interesting, you know, I was talking to a student of mine, and he was asking me, he's 18, and he was asking me about Star Wars. And it's weird because, like, you know, I like Star Wars, but sometimes I really don't like having a geek conversation about it, you know, because it's just like, okay, what else could we possibly say about it? But it is kind of fun to talk about it with someone in a different generation.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's different when you and I talk about something. Right. It's like,
we've been over this before.
Yes.
But talking to this 18-year-old, when he asked me, so I'm guessing you really like those original ones. I was like, well, yeah, that's what I grew up with. I'm guessing you hate Jar Jar Binks. Yeah, I fucking do. Well, let me tell you why I like Jar Jar Binks. He just starts a conversation like that. Please. I'm, like, working on stuff, got all this... Please, do go on.
Tell me, why does he like him?
Comic relief, mostly. He thought that Jar Jar was funny, you know? He loved this, like, fish out of water kind of character, you know? for him, it was like really impactful when he was a little kid.
I mean, I can see that. I mean, 18, so he was born, what, 2001, 2002? So, I mean, the original, I mean, not the original, but episode one was already out way before he was born, like 2 or 3 years
I mean, before. I think we were like 16 or so, because I remember working at
it was Supers, 99 when he came,
and I remember all the promos for it and stuff, so it's already getting cynical enough to where I wasn't going to put up with Jar Jar.
Yeah, no, of course not.
Yeah, but he made a good argument for him, I suppose.
I guess so. And then they in Spaced, they you know, then
it reminded me of that, they talked about how, like, you know, if I were a little kid, I might have really loved it, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, because like, when you really look at it, like, the Ewoks are really kind of gay too, but
we love them because we grew up with them. Someone's trying to interrupt our podcast.
Oh, they got intruders.
Hopefully it's not Jar Jar Binks.
Right.
Yeah, that character was even more annoying this time around.
Rewatching
this.
Yeah.
Actually, that whole fucking, like, trilogy was really painful to get through. And
I haven't tried watching it, and I don't remember. I mean, well, I only watched each one once in the theater.
In the theaters, right?
Yeah. So, the first one, I think I saw a lot more because when I worked at the Ward's, at the department store, they would kind of keep it on a loop to sell their TVs.
Right.
So that one I've seen like a bunch of times. But the other two I saw once in the theater and barely remember them.
So, I mean, like, the third one wasn't that... It was the better of the three. You know, it's kind of like, finally, this is what we're trying to get to, is just wrap this shit up already. And it did it. But, like, the second one was really, like, distracting was the CGI. And it was very, very bad. Like, it looked almost like a CGI animated, like, film now.
Yeah. You know?
Like, these Pixar movies are getting to the point where it's like, you know, you could tell they're animated, but they're very good.
Is the second one where Yoda gets into it?
He's in all three of those.
No, I mean where he lightsaber fights?
Yeah, he's in that. He lightsaber fights Count Dooku, right?
Dooku. Yeah. One of the most unfortunate villain's name in the franchise.
It's because of fucking Venture Brothers.
Not even before that. It's just a dumb-sounding name.
Dooku.
Yeah.
Gotta take a Count Dooku. But yeah, it's
but like such forget like Darth Vader and Solo, like such iconic characters, and like none of the characters in those others like hold up.
No.
Princess Leia, iconic character.
Very iconic.
You know, none of these Princess Amidala, fucking Jar Jar, the Jango Fett, Dooku, like they who the fuck? Nah.
They're very forgettable characters.
Very forgettable. Grievous even?
Yes, and was probably the coolest character.
Probably.
Him and Darth Maul.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why did they get rid of Darth Maul so quickly?
Yeah.
Like, when he was all over the cover, like the posters, you know? Yeah. Just that face. It was all everywhere. Yeah. You know, the toys. Yeah. I think it was like, he was the package of all the action figures that were coming out that year.
Yeah.
And it's like, it was fucking all about Darth Maul. And you're like, oh, man, this is the guy who leads up to, you know, Darth Vader in a sense, you know? It's like, so what, does he kill him off and become the new apprentice? You know, that's what I was thought was going to happen. But then they fucking killed
him. They kind of threw him away fast, right?
Very fast.
And so who was he again in this universe? What exactly was his function?
He was the apprentice, the Sith apprentice.
Okay.
To the Emperor.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
And so the Emperor always keeps himself a fresh apprentice.
That's right.
So he doesn't have anyone take over.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which what happens, right?
Does it?
Yeah. Doesn't Darth Vader kill him at the end of Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, but he doesn't take over because he dies too.
He does too, but you know. That was the whole thing was, you know, Anakin's supposed to destroy the Sith and bring balance to the Force, and that's how it happens.
Yeah.
Those prequels really damaged the whole fucking
I can't keep any of it straight. It's
I know, everything with the Trade Federation and it's like, what's going on here? Yeah. Why?
And now Werner Herzog's involved. They had to get him to straighten it out.
And it's pretty funny, like, they were talking about the Baby Yoda thing going on in this Mandalorian and how they built the puppet, and when they were getting ready to use it, like, they're like, ah, no. We just let's just go CGI. And I guess Herzog's like, stop being a pussy. Use the puppet.
Really?
Yeah. And then they're like, okay. And so they use the puppet. But I thought that was kind of funny. He's like, stick to your decisions and go with it.
Yeah.
Don't fucking second guess yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Herzog is fucking brilliant when it comes to that kind of stuff.
But it works. I mean, like, you look at...
It works for life. You ever read this guy's shit? The guy's fast. Like, if everybody lived like Herzog, this world would be a really interesting place. And to think that this guy dedicates his time to making movies, like one of the most arguably trivial of mankind's inventions, or seemingly so.
Right.
You know, and to have dedicated his life to doing that, it says a lot, because the man is just brilliant, I'm convinced. Quite a philosopher.
Well, you have a lot of power when you use media.
You do, yeah.
People will listen to you more.
Mm-hmm.
People will fucking probably listen to Jennifer Aniston if she told them, you know,
but
shit.
But paradoxically, he's probably the last person who would tell you he has something to say. You know what I mean?
Most of the time, the brilliant people keep their mouth shut, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, like I remember, like, in his book that he recently, that came out not too long ago, somebody asks him about what is the best advice he's ever been given. And you expect something really profound from him. And he said that the best advice came from the hotel magnate, Conrad Hilton, who once said, when you take a shower, make sure the curtain is on the inside. That's very practical and good advice.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, without fucking skipping a beat.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and there's something about people like that that have these forceful personalities. Like, I think Bernie Sanders has it, you know, a genuine personality. Somebody that you really think, like, yeah, that's how they really are. I believe it. I believe it when this person is as humble as he is. I believe it when, you know, Herzog would be the last person that would say that he has something to say. Because I really believe that he doesn't think that highly of himself.
Well, I mean, just put it this way. I mean, the guy got us to almost walk to fucking Fort Collins from Denver.
I know.
Because he walked from Paris to Munich.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a bit...
We couldn't even do that.
Yeah.
But that's a big... A lot of that, I feel, is like being a product of our environments, right? Like, he didn't grow up on junk food television, and he didn't grow up on junk movies, you know what I mean? You know, he grew up in the rubble of Germany after the war, you know? I mean, he might have even been old enough to remember parts of the war. So, I mean, it's a whole different thing that feeds his ambitions and his goals, you know? And what, like, he doesn't reminisce about, like, when they blended comedy and horror. He blends, you know, he reminisces about when horror fell from the skies from American planes, you know what I mean? It just creates a different kind of person, I think. One who's probably a lot less fearful about little things in life, like a job and fucking health insurance and all that kind of shit. The stuff that keeps us up at night.
Right, right. I mean... And it's definitely, you know, you become the product of your environment and how you're raised. I know, like, you are very cynical about your childhood and thinking back, you know, kind of hating being nostalgic, where I'm the complete opposite, you know.
My buddy Mike, you know, I hate childhood.
I love it.
Sums it all up in one.
Well, the thing is, like, you know, I figured, like, maybe I would have more of a reason to hate childhood the way, you know, what I've seen, you know,
mm-hmm.
how I've grown.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think that's probably why I love my childhood so much and why I find such an attachment is, like, the things that I hold dear to me, that's my comfort, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's my security blanket. That's what kept me from, you know, falling victim to, you know, a mother like I had and, you know, that kind of a neglectful father, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, Jason was always there for me, so I'm going to...
Yeah.
I trust him.
Yeah.
I'm going to... And keep going with that guy.
I mean, I watched all those same movies, and I grew up on them and loved them, too, you know, and also from a very young age, horror movies. But I don't know. I don't know why maybe I just am really leery of this returning home concept, you know what I mean? I feel like I never have left, and sometimes that gives me, like, makes me feel worse. Like, I feel like I should have left home, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I never really felt like I did.
And maybe that's, like, because I moved around so fucking much, mm-hmm. you know, I never really had a home.
Mm-hmm.
So I...
That is your home.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting, huh?
It is very interesting. You know, I regret, you know, when I lived in Ukraine, but I also regret that I came back as soon as I did. I feel like I should have stayed. I should have stayed longer.
I feel the same way about Florida.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad I came back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not to go and get too... you know, off of topic, but, you know, reconnecting with Sabrina, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, just, you know, we were supposed to meet up and talk and, I think, like, you know, there's, like, I have this, like, kind of, like, you know, drawn to, like, you know, like, I want to reconnect now. Like, I want to, like, get closer again now. And I think a lot of it might have to be because, like, that's the only person left that I have around of when we lived together at 1605.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Everyone else just is gone.
Yeah.
And to me, like, I think that was, like, that was a home to me,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I never really had a place that, like, I felt like, this is such a warm place for me, yeah, you know?
Despite all the drama
exactly.
That came with it. I think that, you know, I'm like, we really kind of latch on to some of those memories, right? You know, and want to recreate them and relive them, you mm-hmm. know? I myself do. I just realize that I can't, you know? And I think, but I get more and more frustrated by the fact that I can't, you know what I mean? And so then it's probably better that I just enjoy this moment now, you know? That's all I got.
That's what I'm trying to move forward with that stuff, you know? Because I know, like, it is, like, we've talked in the last episode about, mm-hmm. like, how crippling it could be,
yeah.
You know? How, like, if you allow yourself to not leave, you're never going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to allow myself to leave. But, you know, it's always good. You can return home once in a while.
Yeah, it is nice. Once in a while it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do feel like that's a problem. I think too many of us live there and never leave, you know what I mean? I think that is kind of a problem.
I agree. You know, I know it is my problem.
Our generation, the previous generation, the current generation, younger generation, it's a pervasive problem. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, we're all pretty much afraid of leaving. We're afraid of having that great, we're afraid of living. Like, we're so fucking afraid of living, man. Like, again, I guess that's why, like, you know, I mean, Herzog makes a movie and he literally moves a mountain over, or excuse me, a ship, a giant ship over a mountain. You know what I mean? He didn't have to, but he did it. He could have built a model. No, he fucking pulled a giant boat over a mountain. You know what I mean? Like, he did this shit. Like, he didn't live in fear of, like, what the studios might think, you know, or what would happen if he didn't get insurance on this particular day or something like that, you know? Like, he just doesn't live that way. And I feel like that's a guy, why we can learn a lot from him is, like, that's a guy who really just lives every fucking day, who can say something about putting a shower curtain on the inside is the best advice. I don't even think he's really all that joke. He's German. He doesn't fucking joke. You know what I mean? I think he's serious. Like, that really is important advice to him, because he's just too busy living to really give a shit about these little things. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
They're all little and petty, you know? Stupid jobs, stupid problems, stupid bullshit, stupid health insurance, stupid politicians, all of it dumb, you know? We just need, and we worry about it. So no wonder we keep going back to the same safe places, you know, for childhood, safe places of even yesterday afternoon, just safe places of the comic books and the costumes, you know, like it's safe. You know, we have nothing to really be afraid of, nothing real anyway. And like, people like him live through shit to really be afraid of, you know what I mean? And those people don't have time for frivolous shit. And, you know, I'm sure that has its consequences, too. I'm sure there's its negative sides to living that way. But there's this part of me that just, that's what I yearn for, is to experience that way of living. You know what I mean? Like, this shit, like, you know, a lot of people say, like, oh, you know, I envy you. You know, you went to Ukraine, blah, 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 blah. Like, yeah, it's cool. But you know what? It was still relatively safe. You know, it's not like I joined the army or the French Foreign Legion. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Way outside my comfort zone. But still, relatively safe in the grand scheme of things, you know what I mean? I just don't really feel like I made more money there than Ukrainian doctors make, you know, by American standards, it's shit, but I didn't live in poverty. I wasn't living in some fucking hut, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, you know, I don't really know what it's like to really go out there and walk the border of my country or my state, you know, just for the hell of it, to really live in that way, to really pay attention to what's really important, being a human being. Everything I've done is paid attention to trivial, stupid shit. You know what I mean? And I'm beginning to really, like, regret it. And knowing that I can't do anything about it, it's like, okay, well, now I got to just do something about it.
Yeah.
You know? So for me, that means, like, I've got to stop living so much in the past. I can visit once in a while, but I can't live in it anymore.
No, I definitely agree. I mean, I said probably before, like, you know, that was one of our biggest... Mm-hmm. Drawbacks was, yeah, like, you know, we kept talking about when we were younger, mm-hmm, when we were doing things and when we had ambition and when we had hopes,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you remember that, you remember when we actually had a plan for our future. We're in the future. What are we doing?
Yeah, but I also think that one of the consequences for me of all this stuff that I really have to think about is it's caused me to not have much of an identity of my own, you know, to be raised by all of that stuff, because I don't really feel all that akin to my own parents, which I think is very weird. Like, as loving and as sweet and as great as they are, I don't really feel like I'm in their same family in many ways, you know? I don't know why that is, but I feel like a lot of my personality traits and some of the things that I do and think and have done are so fucking bizarre and out of nowhere that I have to wonder where it comes from. And I feel like a lot of it is because I raised myself on a diet of junk, you know? And I've lived my life trying to emulate other people, characters in movies or books or TV shows or whatever, rock stars and shit like that. And I had never really known who I am, you know what I mean? I never really had a strong sense of self or an urgent sense of self. So everything I've ever wanted to do, I'm basically borrowing from someone else, you know? So I'm really trying to get, like, figure that out. So then what is it that I want to do? Who am I? I don't know. You know, I don't know if I ever did.
Wow. Yeah. I guess, like, you know, I feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I chose not to, you know, connect with my parents and really get to know their background, you know? So I think that's part of my flaw. Yeah. You know, that's one of the things I was talking with before, you know, having to confront, you know, certain people from my past, you know. I think, you know, I have a huge task ahead, and I'm just prepping for that, you know, to, you know, confront my parents about certain things. Mm-hmm. And maybe I get a little bit closure, and then I can move forward.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's been holding me back is, like, you know, like we're saying, you know, all this nostalgia is a safety blanket for me. It's keeping me secure. It's keeping me warm and snug, you know. And if I leave that, you know, I'm so vulnerable and naked almost.
Yeah.
And I have to, you know, because I have never confronted these demons from my past. And that's always been my draw, you know. So, maybe... we'll get some more answers when we talk about music, huh?
Let's return to music next time.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.